So tonight we're going to look at working with others. Tonight, experienced the big book, and we started working with others last week, and we just covered two or three pages because there's so much information. I'd like to point out that when we read the page on page 89, Jimmy talked to me afterwards, and the second paragraph is really promises. And it says, life will take on a new meaning. That's a promise. To watch people recover, to see help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you. This is an experience you must not miss. So those are all promises. And so it's a neat way of looking at that. And we talked about all that information last week, and that podcast went out yesterday, so you can listen to it on the site. Today we're on page 91. Now, this Working with Others was written in 1938. The book was published in 1939. And this is how they worked with people in those days. It was a different world. And people, they worked with people and then brought them to the meeting. They didn't have people come to the meeting and then find someone to work with. It was a different world. And they worked very closely one-on-one with the new person. And remember, they had to take the third step, and they had to think that they were serious before they let them go to the meeting. And they used to take it upstairs in the meeting house on their knees. And so it was a different world. They were very serious about the instructions and how to help people. Now, I think what we're going to read now, when you're seeing the person one-on-one, still applies today. Alcoholism hasn't really changed. The fellowship has changed, but alcoholism is still the same disease. So let's see what they say. There's a lot of good stuff. I was looking at this today. And for those who are listening or come, you know, I don't have a canned talk. I don't know what I said about these pages last time we went through them. I don't remember. It's not important because I see it new each time. And so I saw some new stuff today when I was studying for this. I don't know, this is probably, what, the 30th or 40th time I've gone through these pages, maybe more than that. It says, see your man alone, if possible. So they're talking about one-on-one. Now, if it's a woman, I suggest if you're a man, you see her with another woman. But working one-on-one, see the person alone. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. So you could talk about how you drank, some of the symptoms you had of your alcoholism, some of your experiences with your alcoholism. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. And you might ask yourself, when you read this book, you're supposed to read in the first person. What were my habits? What was my symptoms? What was my experiences? You think about it. And so answer that question for yourself. He says, you will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of my drinking career. They call it a career. Up to the time you quit. And, you know, we know that the disease of alcoholism occurs when we're sober, right? Because when we're sober, we can't live in the world without alcohol. We get restless, irritable, discontented, right? Because we're living self-centered lives, and it doesn't work. And we get in conflict with everybody and everyone. Now, we don't know that. We don't say that to ourselves. Gee, I'm having a bad day. I'm full of resentment, fear, shame, and guilt. My life's a mess. Get a drink. I'm going to get a vodka. We don't say that. We just say, I'm going to have a drink. Why? Because our mind's been trained that it's going to change the way we feel. Now here they're talking about your experiences drinking with the new person because they're alcoholics. So that's how you're going to relate to them. Tell them how you drank so they can see if they drank like you drank. And remember when Dr. Bob and Bill met in 1935, Dr. Bob was an alcoholic. He knew he was an alcoholic. He went to the Oxford group. He was very religious. He studied the Bible every night and got drunk. He tried to work the Oxford group steps, but he could not quit drinking. And the reason he couldn't quit drinking is he didn't know what his problem was. See, he thought he was a sinful man. He had fallen short of the glory of God. He didn't deserve, you know, God's forgiveness. He thought he was an ill, weak, sinful person. And when he talked to Bill and he realized that he had an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind, and he had no power to fix himself, then he could forgive, start the process of forgiveness, and then he was able to recover. And so talking one-on-one with a person, it's pretty important. You can save a life. If he says that he has a serious mood, that means, is he really serious about this thing? Is he ready? Is he ready? Is he willing? Dwell in the troubles liquor has caused you. Being careful not to moralize or lecture. Well, that's hard for me. But that was a joke, by the way. But it's hard. It's hard because we want the people to get better so badly. We're so anxious for them to have what we have that sometimes we become like evangelists. Well, you know, if it's an alcoholic, they're not going to listen to that. Alcoholics are not the easiest person to work one-on-one with. I don't know if any of you noticed that. But they're not, and I certainly probably wasn't either. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Now here, we're getting into more. You're starting the thing, you're trying to get some communication with the new person. Let them know that, you know, you're not holier than thou. You've done the deal. You know what this is all about. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, describe yourself as an alcoholic. So how would I describe myself as an alcoholic? Well, they're gonna tell us on the next page. But myself as an alcoholic, I had no control of alcohol once I put it in my body, and I could not quit entirely on my own. I had no power to do that. Everybody can quit for a while. Everybody here is sober today. But I don't know if everybody here is going to stay sober. We could always quit one day, but can we quit for good and for all? And then what is the queer mental twist that I get in my mind right before the drink? You see, what was the queer mental twist that told me it's okay? Right? Anybody else have that? Yeah, you're throwing up at 9 o'clock. And at 10:30, you're drinking. How'd that happen? Well, because we have a queer mental twist. We're going to talk about it a little bit. It's on the next page. Tell him how baffled you were. Was anybody baffled? I think what was baffling was me to how my life became such a mess. And, you know, it was just baffling because I thought I really tried hard. I had good motives. I thought they were all self-centered. I thought I was a good person. And how did it end up like this? And, you know, when I did my fourth and fifth step, I realized I made a lot of decisions based on self that caused me harm. But I didn't know that in the beginning. But it's baffling, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's baffling. And how you finally learned that you were sick. So could you tell someone how you learned you were sick? Well, I think you learn, it says you learn through this process of going through the book. You learn about how you have an illness. And you learn about your self-centeredness, right? And you learn about your separation from God. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Anybody struggle to stop? They're usually pretty comical. You know how you know you're an alcoholic? I heard, do you hide alcohol? Now, the reason why I say that is because alcohol is legal, right? You're not going to get arrested. But alcoholics hide it, right? And we hide a lot of it, right? Because we don't want to run out. And we're very clever. In fact, I don't know about you, but after you recover, you find some of the places you hid the alcohol you didn't even realize. And you say, gee, where did that come from? I know we're being humorous, but it is funny. We're hiding alcohol, which is legal. Why? Because we know it's not good for us. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spree. Anybody who's ever come to AA and left should be able to tell us the queer mental twist. Because everybody comes in, tells us how good they'd be here, their life was a mess, I love you, I love the meeting, oh, I can't get enough of this, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, a month later, they're not here anymore. Their mind tells them it's okay to drink. Right before you drink, remember, we're all intelligent. Everybody think you're intelligent here? Good. We all have willpower, don't we? But how come right before we drink, my mind can't say bad idea? Because it only thinks what alcohol is going to do for me, to me. Now, a lot of people start feeling better just on the way to the liquor store. Or if you're an addict, just when you get the pills. You haven't even taken them yet. You haven't even drank, but you feel better because you know what's coming. Can anybody relate to that? And so when our mind's like that, it can't say no. There's no power that can become an alcoholic between them and their next drink or an addict and their pill unless it's God. That's the only power. And God gives us the truth. And that's why we study the book, because it's the directions to God. And so today, if I think of a drink, I say, bad idea, Michael. Bad idea. I think it through. I think that there's not enough booze. There are not enough pills. My life will be a mess. Why would I want to do that? Bad idea. But that doesn't mean that I won't get it next week if I stop doing this. Remember, we have a daily reprieve from that queer mental twist, dependent on my relationship with God. It's kind of sobering, isn't it? And so, it suggests, as we have done in the chapters of the alcoholism, we have a whole chapter in here, which we're starting the book over on Saturday, so we'll be getting that soon, where he talks, the whole chapter is about how we have no defense against the first drink on our own. It must come from God. He talks about Jim. Remember, Jim swore he wasn't going to drink again. He's gone to treatment a lot. They go to see him. Jim tells him he's done for good. He's going to give his life to God, right? And then it says Jim woke up on Tuesday morning. Well, Monday he was drunk. And he goes to the business that he used to own. And he has a few words with the boss. Not good, right? So then Jim gets this brilliant idea that he's going to sell a car in the country. And that there's a bar there where he likes to get a sandwich. And he's going to go to the bar to sell a car. And then all of a sudden it says the thought crossed to him that if I mix whiskey with milk, it won't bother me. And he says, I had this queer feeling that it wasn't a good idea, but it didn't stop him. And that's Jim. Jim, and he says he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And then they talk about Fred. Fred was having trouble with alcohol. He got admitted to the hospital. He was having trouble quitting drinking. And then he thought about it. He was a very bright man, that he knew what was wrong with him. He understood his condition. He wasn't going to drink again. And then Fred went to Washington to sell a business thing, and it went perfectly. Everything was perfect. He had the greatest, it's a perfect day. And then Fred goes back to the hotel, and he hears the music in the bar. And he goes in, he sits and has dinner, and then he says, well, I'll have a drink. And then he's drunk, and he can barely get home alive. So they go to see him in the hospital, and he says, you know, I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but now I know. Now, there are two examples. One, Fred had a perfect day. His life was perfect. Now, why do alcoholics drink on a perfect day? Because it's never good enough. Outside circumstances never fix the world good enough for me to be okay. And Jim had a real bad day. And we drink on bad days, right? Because it's not good enough to fix. And the only thing that fixes what's wrong with me, my alcoholism, is God, and it's fixed inside. I don't have outside circumstances now. I'm not dependent on them to feel good or bad. And that's a great freedom. And so that's the queer mental twist. It's really done well. They also talk about the jaywalker. Any jaywalkers in here? He keeps running in front of cars. Runs in front of cars. It gets hit. He thinks it's great. And he keeps running. He's pretty fast in the beginning. But he gets hit a lot. So then he decides that he's going to run quicker. And then he takes a solemn oath. He's not going to run. And then he breaks his leg and everything. He's in the hospital. And he gets out. He's hit again. And they say, isn't that just like alcoholism? Chapter of the Alcoholic is really powerful. Why did they put a whole chapter in there? Because they know we're not going to want to do the steps. We're not going to want to completely surrender until we really understand the hopelessness of our condition. And the book is really well written in that regard. Remember, it's a textbook. So the beginning is the first step, is the first 44 pages. I know I got off the tangent, but we'll get back. It's the same thing. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. See, if you talk about how you drank and you hid the booze and all the stories, he will match your mental inconsistencies with his own. We're not talking about how much they drank. The mental inconsistencies with drinking again after it caused you problems. And it's the mental inconsistencies. When he sees that, he's going to begin to see what? His powerlessness. He's powerless over alcohol. It's in a bottle, for God's sakes. How does it get out and have power over him? It has power in your mind. Your mind's been damaged with regard to alcohol. Your mind can't see the truth. Father Bill W. gives a great talk on this. And he says, our mind has been damaged. We can't see the truth. We can't see what's good for us. And with regard to alcohol and even other things. And so now you see they're going to go right into that. Because if you're satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, now they use the term real alcoholic in this book. Now they use the term heavy drinker. A heavy drinker can quit if he's given sufficient reason to do so. The doctor says you're going to die in a month or 6 months if you drink again. Wife's going to leave you. I'm going to get fired. They quit. And there are heavy drinkers in AA. It's fine. It's good. They're helpful. They're having a spiritual life from it. But a real alcoholic has lost the power of what? Control, lost the power of choice. And what makes you also a real alcoholic, remember, what makes me an alcoholic? Everybody here said they're an alcoholic. There's a possible alcoholic. She may make the grade someday. We'll see. You know, it's very liberating once you realize you're an alcoholic and you can admit it. There's a sense of relief. But we don't talk anybody into that. They're going to talk about that. But what makes me an alcoholic? Now, sure, I have an allergy to alcohol, right? And I don't have loss of choice. But what makes me an alcoholic is that alcohol changes the way I feel. It changes my perception of reality. That's a very powerful thing. Now, I happen to be at risk that anything that changes my perception of reality, it's dangerous to me. And so it changed the way I feel. My mind knows that. And then my mind seeks what? The ease and comfort of alcohol. And that makes you helpless, right? To dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Now, malady is an illness, right? And it's a hopeless disease. Now, I took care of cancer patients. A lot of them got better, but a lot of them, they had a hopeless condition. They had no power to fix it, and they would die of their disease. We have a disease that's hopeless, and I have no power of my own to fix it. But once I surrender and give up and work the steps and have a relationship with God, then I don't have to die of this. So I never get power of my own to quit drinking. I get a relationship with the power, and then the power takes care of me, and I let God take care of my life, not me. And so we have a treatment. Now why, if you're hopeless and you're an alcoholic and we offer you the treatment, why won't they do it? Why won't people do this? It sounds insane, right? Because they can't see the true reality of their situation. We read tonight, it says, there are those who cannot and will not give themselves to the simple program. Constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. What does it mean being when they say constitutionally capable of being honest? They can't see the truth about the hopeless nature of their disease. They can't, I heard somebody say it well, they can't really see how bad it really is. And I think the moment of complete defeat for me was I could see how bad it really was. I was humbled enough by the disease that the grace of God came in and gave me a clarity to say I can't do this anymore. I ask God for help. And that was a turning point in my life. And so it says, showing from your own experience how the queer mental conditions surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. And then they call it a queer mental condition. Because remember, it's in your mind. Alcohol has power of you in your mind. It makes your mind want to drink it, even when you say you don't want to, because you can't overcome the feeling of what it's going to do for you. It's going to change the way I feel. And we had two examples. On a great day, it still has power over you. And on a bad day, it has power over you. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And it says, and be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. But it doesn't say that you can't tell a person they're an alcoholic, because they say that in one of the stories. AA number 3, we told him he's an alcoholic. But we don't like to do that. And we don't want to brand them. It says, let him draw his own conclusion. People have to see the truth for themselves. The first step, you have to take 100%, and you can, and you take it from your experience. What's been your experience? Is your life unmanageable by you? Or you're completely powerless over alcohol? And you have to take that 100%. If you don't, you're not going to do the rest of the steps. And I think the reason most people don't stay in AA is they don't take it 100%. They say, well, I can manage it now, or their ego starts to tell them it's not that bad, right? I don't need to go to the meetings. He talks too much. I don't want to listen to him. Blah, blah, blah. Your mind's starting to tell you, you can handle it. And the mind, my ego will try to kill me. It sounds crazy, but it will if I listen to it. And it says, be careful not to Brandon Wenis draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Now, when you become severely afflicted, you cross that invisible line. And you're usually drunk when you do it. You cross that invisible line that you cannot ever go back from when you've lost the power of choice. And notice it says little chance he can recover by himself. It doesn't say you can't recover. But we know you can recover. You can recover with us and doing the steps. But by himself, you can't do it. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. You see, they're hammering this home, a fatal illness. Talk about the conditions of mind and body which accompany it. We talked about that. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that, and here's the truth. Many are doomed who never realize their predicament. That's what I was just talking about. They can't realize the predicament they're in. They know things are bad, but they don't know how bad. They can't see the truth. And I think that's true. Those are people who won't do this. They still think they have a plan. It's not that bad. There's something in their mind tells them that they don't have to do this. And as long as your mind tells you that, you won't do it. So complete surrender in AA is complete willingness to go to any length, right? With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and honest, right? And so many are doomed. And we see them, and we just can't help them. And doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism. Why? We've talked about a lot. We have a solution here. And what we're really supposed to be talking about in AA is the solution. The meeting should be about the solution. They should be focused on the steps, what we need to do to recover. AA's gotten away from that. We have a lot of discussion meetings, but in the beginning they focused on the solution. And that's what we try to do in this meeting. We're trying to focus on the solution so that you don't have to die. If I do this, I'll recover with God's power. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell me he's alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition. Now, they call the new alcoholic the protege. It means a person who is guided or supported by a more experienced person. So we're supposed to guide or support the person. Remember, we're supposed to walk path by path in spiritual progress with the new person, hand in hand. Not in front of the new person, not above the new person, hand in hand with the new person. Down the path. None of us in this room are any better than anyone else. We're all the same. We're all children of God, just trying to find the solution together. He has become very curious to know how you got well. That's a good question, isn't it? Now, if you're new here and you see people like Bill celebrate 10 years, you might want to go up to Bill after the meeting and say, how'd you get well, Bill? If you see people in the meeting here who seem to be okay, you'll say, gee, I'm going to go up and ask them how you got well. Now, where's that in the book? It's on page 20. It's the only question that Sandy Beach says we're supposed to ask. And on page 20, it's a new person reading the book. And he says, I'm reading it. I may have already asked myself why it is that all of you became so very ill from drinking. Dallas, I'm curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert to the contrary, how you have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. That's a good idea, isn't it? And it says, if you are an alcoholic who wants to go over it, get over it. Do you want to get over it? Then you may be already asking, what do I have to do? Isn't that a good question? Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys recovered. What do I have to do? Get to it. And then it says, it's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. So that's why we study this book. It answers the question specifically of what do I have to do? And the more I study this and I see what I have to do, I might start to do it. And then if I'm doing it and I study this, I may start doing it better. And then I start, may get closer to God. And I may be getting more peace and serenity. So he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question. And then, how did you get well? Ask yourself, what did I do? What could I tell the new person? And it says, he says, tell him exactly what happened to you, stressing the spiritual feature freely. In other words, the spiritual experience, the steps we had to take to have a relationship with our Creator. And you don't have to be afraid at that point. Now, a lot of people say they don't want to hear about God, right? Well, why? Because they don't want to give up. They don't want to. Alcoholics don't like to take directions. So if they hear about God, God may give them directions, and they don't want to take directions. And the third step is asking God to be your director. So look what it says. If the man be an agnostic or atheist, and this is a powerful line, it's in italics, he does not have to agree with my conception of God. Now, when I talk to somebody, I don't have to tell them who my God is. I just tell them I have a relationship with my conception of God, and it works for me. Now, here's the criteria they say. He could choose any conception he likes, right? We say that. But they have a warning. It must make sense to him. People talk about the doorknob or the tree or something. I don't know where that got started. It has to make sense to you. And I heard a speaker say, it must make sense to you at 3 a.m. when things are bad and things look bad. It makes sense that there's something that you can go to. And I have new people write out their own conception of God. Mine's changed through the years. I realize God isn't a person up there anymore. It's an experience. It's a power that I have, and it's love. It's the ability to see things differently and to practice love in any situation. And it's an experience, and I know I trust this experience. If I go to it and ask this experience to help me, it will. And so I know that. And it says the main thing, so this is probably the main thing, is that the alcoholic be willing to believe in a power greater than himself. Is that a good idea? Well, it better be, because if you have no power to fix this, you better believe in a power. Now, it sounds so straightforward. You're dying. Your life's an effing mess. You can't stop drinking. You know, everybody wants to leave you. And then you have to just say, I'm willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself. It sounds so easy, doesn't it? But it's not easy for an alcoholic, because by doing that, he's realizing that he can't fix this and he needs help. And remember, it's like the lighthouse in the ship. The ship's, the battleship is in on the sea, and it's sailing on a path, and it's got its course set. And it sees this light ahead, and it says, you better move. I'm going that way. I'm going that way. You better move. And they say, we're not moving. And they say, well, you better move. I'm a big battleship. And then the light signals back, we're a lighthouse. See, it's so hard for us. We just keep hitting the lighthouse. We won't change direction, because it's my direction. So it says, practice, you live by spiritual principles. Anybody think that's a good idea? Sounds great, doesn't it? Well, what are the spiritual principles, right? So I'd given this out at one time. I know nobody read it, but it's on principles of the steps. And this was Bill W. And he talked at this meeting, and he asked the members a question. If the principles of 12-step recovery are not the 12 steps, what are the principles? And he returned to the meeting a year later, and they wanted to know the answer. And this guy says, I've been looking all year in the literature of the principles and can't find them. My answer to these groups of members was the same one I give my sponsees. The principles of the 12 steps of recovery are the opposite of my character defects. And remember, we have this chart. We have the card. I don't have one tonight. I'm sorry, Chris. If you come back, I'll give you one. But we have the program principles on the right-hand side of our spiritual checklist, and the character defects are on the left-hand side. Selfish, dishonest, fear, pride, inconsiderate, get the picture? Greed, lust, anger, envy. The program principles, interested in others. Honest, courage, faith, humility, considerate, giving or sharing, purity, calm, grateful. And so, how does God want me to be? Those are the spiritual principles. He wants me to be this way. And if I be this way, then I will do this way, and the results will be this way. And so AA is really not talking so much about what you do, it's how you be. How you be determines what you do. I just wrote a thought on fear, and it's on the page 68. It's the second paragraph. He says, I am in the world to play the role God assigns. So get on the site, experience a big book, and read it. I think it's one of the best things I've written. And it talks about how I be. The role that God assigns me is how I should be. How do I be in every situation? And be, and if I be that situation, I'll be the best dad, the best father, the best husband, employee, AA member, human being. And so you want to live by spiritual principles, right? And so I'll just go a few more lines. I blabbered a lot tonight, so forgive me. When dealing with such a person, you forgive me, don't you, Jimmy? Good boy. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And we do that. We do it in very everyday language. There's no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. And don't raise such issues, you see. He may not like the idea guide. Now, prejudice, I've been studying the Bible and listening to this audio study, and he talks about prejudice. I used to say it's just prejudgment of something, an old idea, but it's usually prejudgment with a negative view of what you're judging. And so you believe that it's a certain way, and you don't want to change your mind. And prejudice, remember, is the thing that they have a whole chapter in this book about. We agnostic, it says change your mind. Change your mind about God. Change your mind about everything. Be open to new ideas. And prejudice is one of the things that blocks alcoholics. We prejudge things, and then we decide it's no good. And he may have prejudice, and it says, don't raise those issues. Now we're going to stop here. And next week we'll pick up with how you talk to the new person about faith, about relationship with God, and how you work one-on-one. And it's very powerful stuff. And then the book also gives in this chapter, tells us about responsibilities with the new person. It tells us about going where there's alcohol. It tells us about if you have domestic problems, and just so much. So we're going to spend quite a few, probably several weeks on this chapter. But it's worth it. It's good stuff, isn't it, guys? Mm-hmm. So we'll quit there, and we'll open it up for some discussion. Thank you.